This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Payer Issues Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Darren Weathers, Vice President of Clinical Operations at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. Dr. Weathers, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Laura. Happy to be here.
Now, I know we'll talk a lot about some of the interesting things going on at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona and what to expect in the future, but before we dive in, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Happy to do so. I'm an internal medicine physician, board certified, and practiced for 20 years before moving over to the managed care space. I've been a physician executive in managed care for the past 10 years, initially with Coventry and Aetna in the St. Louis marketplace, and here in Arizona with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona for the past 6 years, initially as the chief medical officer for our Medicare Advantage plan, and then presently, as you mentioned, as Vice President of Clinical Operations on the commercial side of the business.
Absolutely. So in that role, or your current role as Vice President of Clinical Operations, what do you oversee? What are some of your priorities and responsibilities?
I oversee all of the full and part-time physicians who manage our staffing. We also have a team of four nurses who participate in our high-cost claimant review activity. We manage the credentials, peer review, focused provider review, and the pharmacy and therapeutics committees. In addition, we run an interdisciplinary care team rounds that we do with our care management. So essentially all things that are medical management fall under the realm of this position.
Got it. That's so interesting. And obviously, you know, it's been a really challenging year in healthcare with COVID-19 over the past 18 months or so. So I'm wondering, from your vantage point, how are you thinking about growth for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona over the next 12 months or so? I know, you know, during some of these times are ripe for change and innovation as well. And so I'd love to hear what you're really thinking about and how you're going to approach the coming year or so.
That's a great question, Laura. You know, Blue Cross Blue Shield has had a real stronghold in the employer-sponsored health plan business, and that does remain a core business for us, but I really think our higher growth will come in other segments, particularly in the government business segments. The individual marketplace signups have really been bolstered by the premium assistance supplements from the federal government. I think that's brought new participants into the general marketplace, and certainly more of those than we're used to seeing have signed up for our individual plans. Additionally, Arizona is a hotbed for seniors, and we've seen in the state of Arizona a lot of growth. Phoenix in particular is now the fifth largest metropolitan area in the United States. Many of those persons moving in either already Medicare beneficiaries or aging into Medicare. So we're anticipating increased membership in our Medicare Advantage plans as those new members come into the marketplace. Because so many of them have had Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance during their working years, they're already familiar with us as an organization. The younger members are very comfortable with managed care, and so it's a good fit for them.
That makes a ton of sense. And when you're thinking about growing these membership bases, whether it's the individual plans and participants coming in from the marketplace or whether it's the seniors coming into Medicare Advantage, what are you seeing their preferences being in terms of how they interact with you and what they need from their insurer as opposed to how things had been, you know, even 5 to 10 years ago?
I really do think that there are new members are looking for more tech-enabled care and for a simplicity of the care relationship. And that's a challenge for an organization like ours, which has been in place for over 80 years. We're having to pivot and try and move more nimbly than we're used to, so that we stay abreast of the demands of the healthcare consumer and yet still provide that same steady base benefit that we're known for.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, it's really interesting to think about more of the technology care and virtual care. Now, what are the three or so most interesting issues that you're following in healthcare right now?
You know, you mentioned earlier COVID-19 as a transformational event, and I think there's nothing higher on the list than that. We as a company had to pivot to all working remote, and even to this point in time, 97% of our workforce is remote rather than on-site. But we also had to make a similar sort of adaptation for our members. So we expanded our telehealth coverage. We're promoting the use of digital health applications so that members can continue to achieve the health goals that they need. I think this is certainly a move that will continue within the healthcare space, and one that we'll see more of as we move forward. Part of the concern, though, is that people have delayed care, and we worry that there'll be a downstream impact of people having missed their standard screening examinations and regular blood work assessments, having deferred on-site physical examination where abnormalities can be picked up. So where possible, we're encouraging people to reestablish with their PCP, to obtain their screening examinations and laboratory tests so that they don't experience significant sequelae downstream that could be avoided today. Some of the other things we see are changes in people's expectation relative to what gets paid for in healthcare. I've heard people asking, well, if the government can pay for the COVID-19 vaccine, why aren't they paying for other care categories like insulin, which are life-saving? I don't know that anyone has a clear answer to that, but I see it as a growing topic for the future that everyone from the leadership in Washington and our respective state houses to those of us in managed care will need to answer. And then lastly, I think there's a continued shift toward employed status for doctors and other healthcare providers. And that's going to change the way in which they engage with patients and with the types of decisions they make. Clearly, there is a need for access to contracting, access to data, and resource management that's more easy in an employed setting for many doctors than it is in a small group or individual practice. So I would mention those three as the areas I see on the horizon that are really significant.
That's really interesting to hear about. And, you know, I think everything that you mentioned has just a really broad implications, I'm sure, not only for Blue Cross Blue Shield, but also every insurance company and healthcare provider. When you talk about that shift to employment for doctors, does that mean anything for you, or kind of how is that different for you versus working with some of the independent doctors or your membership in how they're connecting with the doctors, if that makes sense?
It does. So we have some patient-centered medical home contracts here in the state of Arizona. They're not numerous, and I think we've been sort of hampered in that regard because many of the practices aren't able to perform the data management that's required as part of those contracts. We've looked to do something more innovative in a different setting, though, which is to create a preferred authorization program for those providers who have demonstrated, you know, clear alignment with our criteria for medical utilization. The first pilot that we're planning to kick off would involve neurosurgery and orthopedic surgery. and those doctors whose authorization approval rate exceeded 95% in the previous 2 years will be invited into this program, whereby they'll have automated approval of any of the procedures which are on our list, rather than having to submit records and go through the more standard authorization process. So we're looking toward that as an entry into that space where we can reduce the authorization requirements and administrative hurdles for our providers and make things easier for them to engage with us. The concurrent responsibility on their side is to be good stewards of the healthcare dollar. They have to request things that are only medically necessary and not those things that are easy for them or items of preference rather than necessity. We're asking them to be reasonable and managing the care of the members so that we don't have to provide such severe oversight. And I think those kinds of relationships build over time as each side trusts the other. But in the beginning, you take baby steps.
Got it. Thank you so much for going through that with us. And I also wanted to quickly go back to some of the changing expectations in terms of what's delayed in, or excuse me, paid for in care. You know, I think that was a great example when you talked about the COVID-19 vaccine and obviously people seeing that being covered by the federal government and having access to it. You know, on the more insurer level and in what you're able to do in your organization, what do you do to kind of communicate to members who are frustrated that, you know, they are still paying for some of these medical things that are obviously highly important and necessary to them? How do you approach that? And is there anything that you're thinking about or preparing to do, I guess, going forward to kind of make sure that, you know, you're communicating what needs to happen on both ends so that care is paid for and accessible to all members?
We haven't engaged in a broad campaign of information and education with respect to the cost of medication, but we did just recently send for our Medicare Advantage patients a listing of generic alternatives for some high-cost medications that both the members and their providers can consider, whether it's appropriate to switch to. We're trying to make them aware of the cost differential in certain categories of medication so that can guide their selection. I do believe it all begins with education and empowerment. For so long, they've talked about, you know, single payer, or in some cases, they've talked about, I've heard talk about making grants to patients, block some grants so that they can manage their own care. You know, there's nothing wrong with that approach, but that approach without education of the individual will lead to its own set of problems. So I think we have to begin with education and then helping the member become a more informed consumer of their own care.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. Thank you so much, Dr. Weathers, for explaining that. Now, before we wrap up our conversation, I have one more question. What are you most excited about today and what makes you nervous?
I'd say that I'm excited about the spirit of innovation that I see in medicine now. I recently was able to talk with a group of medical students, and I was really taken by their questioning of current approaches to care, and by how many of them are entering their careers already with a focus on business management and entrepreneurship. And I think that's pretty refreshing. I see some of the newer health plans that are coming in, you know, aggressively using digital tools to engage the member and to empower them to direct their care. And I think that's something that will be nothing but helpful as the future moves forward. I see patients moving back into that decision-making role and selecting their care needs and style of payment. I can recall back in my parents' era, they had just major medical coverage for catastrophic care, but they paid the the family doctor in cash for those routine care visits that we would take place. And so that was a the type of plan that we don't see as much of these days, but I see returning back into vogue. What I'm nervous about really would be the well-being of those mid to late stage career providers, many of whom have been resistant to adapt to new payment systems and approaches, and who may find it more difficult to continue to thrive in today's medical marketplace. To quote the colloquium, the goose no longer lays the golden eggs like it did before. And so being a thriving provider today will require some adjustments and adaptations.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Weathers, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been a really fascinating discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Laura, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.